Coming to you from the mountains and the plain, the only conservative voices brave enough to push back. This is the Conservative Dash Daily Podcast with Joe Otto.
The left makes all these accusations and the right says, oh, I just turned the other cheek, right? That's so ridiculous. That's so preposterous. No one would ever believe it. And then when they do believe it, they're surprised.
And Max McGuire.
And you look at politicians on the left. They need to convince people that they are victims.
A resistance to the resistance. And now your hosts, Joe Otto and Max McGuire.
And we're back with another edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. My name is Max McGuire.
And this is Joe Otto.
And today we're going to talk about, just like everyone else in the media, gun control. It's really disgusting, one, how these depraved murderers just keep getting away with this. But it's also disgusting how whenever we experience a tragedy like that, before the bodies are even counted or identified, or in some cases before we even know who the shooter is and why he did this, we see gun control advocates trying to use these tragedies to push their agenda and to push their gun control legislation.
Well, I don't even understand if we even start talking about gun control. You know, some of the worst areas in the country that have these strict gun control laws in place are some of the worst offenders or the highest fatality rates by gunshots.
Yeah, and that's absolutely right. And the interesting thing is that over the same weekend that we saw these shootings in El Paso and in Dayton, Ohio, Chicago also experienced a wave of mass shootings. 59 people were shot. And 7 people were killed. And it's just, I mean, we've talked about this before. We won't get into the whole race thing, the whole racial issue. But it's pretty obvious that the race and the ethnicity of the victims and the perpetrators influence what kind of media coverage these tragedies get. But today we're going to focus on, we're not going to get into the race, though we could talk about that for hours. We're not going to get into that issue. We're going to talk about specifically what Democrats are proposing. So today we're going to focus on two specific proposals that the left is putting forward to answer these mass shootings. The first one is going to be the assault weapon ban, which always seems to rear its ugly head after these tragedies. And the other is going to be red flag laws, which is actually a Republican proposal these days. So obviously we know that the left's ultimate goal in gun control is disarmament, gun bans. We know that they want to push an assault weapon ban, but usually they try and carefully craft their arguments a little bit. But we're seeing now after this shooting that they're not hiding their true intentions anymore. Right from the get-go, they're admitting their ultimate goal. Let's go to cut one, Joe Biden.
So to gun owners out there who say, well, a Biden administration means they're going to come for my guns.
Bingo. You're right if you have an assault weapon. The fact of the matter is they should be illegal, period. Look, the Second Amendment doesn't say you can't restrict the kinds of weapons people can own.
Bingo, Joe. Is that what we're going to go with now? Bingo?
Yeah. I mean, this is absurd. It's absurd. The reality is this. Let's just talk about this. A law for a law-abiding citizen never made a difference because they didn't break the law to begin with, right? And assault rifle ban? Assault rifle. Is a hunting rifle an assault rifle?
Under their definition, it is, yeah. It can be. I mean, you've seen what I hunt with.
Look, so it can be. An AR-15, those bullets are actually used. I can show you a Winchester that shoots a .223. That doesn't look like a military-style weapon, if they want to call it that. And I can shoot out of that the same way I can shoot out of one that has...
Of course, when Eugene Stoner invented the AR-15, when he went to the .223 Remington round, that was actually adopted from the .222 round, which was a varmint round used for killing groundhogs and pesky wildlife in the West. So you're absolutely right.
Yeah, but we can't even kill those wildlife now anyway. I mean, now it's hey, don't kill the prairie dogs. They carry the bubonic plague. That's a different...
You know how I feel about prairie dogs. That's completely a different hour. So Joe Biden says bingo. Yes, he's coming after your guns if you own an assault weapon. Let's go to cut two and see what he says next.
You can't buy a bazooka. You can't have a flamethrower.
Oh, my gosh.
So we're going to cut it right there because, yes, you can buy a bazooka. You can submit a Form 4 to the ATF, and a bazooka is a destructive device. So you have to go through the same process as a machine gun, as a suppressor, as a short-barreled rifle or shotgun. And, yes, you can buy a flamethrower. Elon Musk is selling them online right now. So just wanted to cut there because it's completely false. Let's go to cut three.
The guys who make these arguments are the people who say the tree of liberty is watered with the blood of patriots. We need the protection against the government. We need an F-15 for that.
So, Joe, I want to get your opinion on this because the last time I checked, we tried to defeat the Taliban with our jets. And these goat herders in the mountains have now forced us to the peace table using nothing but small arms.
Correct. And it actually is even more... every time we sit down and we start talking about the fact that you need an F-15, you can't buy a bazooka, they create these falsisms and then we actually push them out in the marketplace and people actually bite off on them. They take these sound bites and they go, yeah, we can't have any assault rifles. Well, the reality of it is that every gun is an assault rifle, right? By definition, you can assault someone with that rifle. That makes it an assault rifle. So it's just a slippery slope where, you know, we're trying to disarm all Americans. It has nothing to do with, hey, we're not trying to take away your Second Amendment right. Well, you actually are. You are trying to take away our Second Amendment right.
Yeah, bingo. Let's go to cut four and see what Joe Biden's ultimate plan is.
How would you deal with all the assault weapons that are already out there that people have?
What I would do is I would institute a national buyback program, and I would move in the direction of making sure that in fact was what we tried to do, get them off the street.
But that's not confiscating people.
No, that's not walking into their homes, knocking on their doors, going through their gun cabinets, etc.
So this is a complete falsehood. When he's talking about a gun buyback program, first of all, the government didn't sell you the guns to begin with. Saying that they're going to buy them back is ridiculous. It also kind of shows what their ultimate ideology is. The Second Amendment is a right, protects a right that was given you by God. Saying that the government's going to buy back the guns suggests that the government gave you those rights and now they're going to take them back. They're going to buy them back. But a buyback is confiscation. It's telling the American people that you have to sell back your guns to the government. And if you don't, even if they're not going to go door to door, eventually the law will catch up with you. Joe, do you think a buyback would work?
No, I don't.
What do you think would happen?
I think that you're about to create a civil war. I mean, we are on the brink of it already, right? Some of the looniest, craziest things I've ever seen come out of a person's mouth have come out of the politicians of today. And I have to tell you, it doesn't make a lot of sense that he's even talking about a buyback because they're not even talking about the problem. They're talking about the symptoms of the problem. And that is you have these people out there that are mentally ill. You can't legislate evil. You can't legislate sick people. You just can't. Right.
So. Yeah. And the ultimate question is if someone just bought an AR-15 because they want to kill a bunch of people, let's say, do you think they're going to be first in line at the buyback? Does anyone really think that? The only people that would actually sell them back to the government are the ones who would never in their million years use it to hurt anyone. And that's not to say that the only people who wouldn't turn them in have bad intentions, but that is to say that no one with bad intentions would ever sell these guns back to the government. There's such a gap in the logic here. Like, let's say, okay, let's have a bomb buyback program for all the terrorists. Does anyone think that would work? That's what we're talking about here. This isn't designed to go after criminals or people who are going to go on massacres. This is to go after law-abiding citizens because at the end of the day, what they're worried about is us. Yeah, well, mass shootings are horrible, but statistically, it's a drop in the bucket.
All right, well, let me talk to you about a conspiracy that may be brewing, right? So we've had these two shooters, one in El Paso and one in Dayton, Ohio, right?
Yes.
And one, we know for a fact, was pro-gun control, supported Hillary Clinton, supported Bernie Sanders.
Elizabeth Warren, yeah.
And yet this person went out and shot up and killed multiple people.
Including his sister.
That's
the wild card. But yeah, keep going.
So it is almost as if this, and again, this is getting really far-fetched, and I know that it sits on the verge of almost absurd, like no one would really do this, but it's almost as if the left is creating an environment where people have to die so they can get what they want. That they literally are provoking and pushing, or a part of it. Maybe this is a conspiracy. Maybe these people are actually a part of the left's agenda to strip us of our Second Amendment rights. So in order to do that, they're willing to become pawns, or they're willing to become sacrifices in order to, for the greater good of taking away, our Second Amendment rights. I mean, it sounds crazy, but
we saw in the New Zealand shooting, the mosque shooting, that shooter put a manifesto online. And even though he was in New Zealand, he was not an American, he wrote in his manifesto that he hoped his massacre, his rampage, would affect the gun control debate in the United States. So I don't think it's that far-fetched that if someone in New Zealand was committing an atrocity because he hoped it would ban guns in the United States, I don't think it's that far-fetched to think that someone in the United States would do the same.
Well, it's no more radical than the radical jihadist or terrorist activity is globally, right? They go into villages and they strap on suicide bombs and they blow up innocent people. And the whole idea is that that's supposed to further or create progress on their cause. And I look at what's happening on the left and what they're doing in the market. I mean, they say that President Trump is a racist, but if you sit down and ask any of them, show me one thing that President Trump done that's racist, they can't. They can't show you anything. Nothing that would point to it.
They can't show you anything, and the things that they do show you have been rinsed through the media cycle so much, it's just a game of telephone. You're like, no, he didn't say that. Why do you think he said that? He didn't do that, right? It's a game of telephone where they're still going on about his inaugural speech when he announced his candidacy back in 2015, saying that there were rapists and murderers crossing the border. They're still trying to twist that into him calling all Hispanics rapists and murderers. It's a twisted ideology. But you're right, when they can't show the individual instances where he's a racist. So when something like this happens, something like the horrible shooting in El Paso, that's why you see so many of these candidates coming out and blaming him, because they don't have the evidence, so they're going searching for the evidence. So when something comes up that can even remotely be connected to it, they point to it.
Right. So what's the answer? We literally are seeing this playbook unravel between us, and I don't know if anyone's ever gone back and looked at some of the Marxist or socialist handbooks that have been developed over the last 30 or 40 years. But I'm actually, while I'm talking to you, I'm trying to find some of those. But that what is happening today is almost a page out of those books of what needs to happen in order to erode or change the entire societal system we have within the United States. This is scary stuff. You're not paying attention. If you're not paying attention to what's going on in the United States, then shame on you, because there is an enormous amount of things that we should be concerned about that are happening on the left right now, from things that the candidates are recommending to even some of the boogeymen that they're actually creating in the market that are in our society that truly don't exist. Can't find them. You can't touch them. Right.
And I think what's so disturbing is we saw at the beginning of this clip, we have one more cut from that clip, Joe Biden. I mean, we usually don't see honesty like this. When you say, are you coming for America's guns? Usually it starts with, oh, I support the Second Amendment, but he started with bingo. It's how he talks about that. Yeah, we're coming for your guns. But then he tries to end it with, oh, but that's not confiscation. Let's go to cut five.
So people would be allowed to keep the weapons they already have.
Right now, there's no legal way that I'm aware of that you could deny them the right if they had legally purchased them. But we can, in fact, make a major effort to get them off the street and out of the possession of people.
Yeah, so that's not correct, because the bump stock ban
went into effect. And if you
didn't
have it,
any grandfather provision. I bought a bump stock. I had to destroy it, but I bought one. And I had a letter from the ATF saying you were allowed to own this particular device. And I wasn't allowed to keep that. And that was from an executive order. So, of course, they could push through a bill, a piece of legislation that would either have a buyback, or if that didn't work, then advance it on to nationwide confiscations. Let's right as we jump into the other topic, let's cut to cut six. This is what Kamala Harris had to say about this.
Assault weapons are weapons of war. Be clear about this. Assault weapons are designed to kill a lot of people quickly. There is no reason that they should exist on the streets of a civil society.
Yeah.
There are no reason that they should exist on the streets of a civil society. Any gun that you have can kill lots of people.
Yeah, if the streets were lined with AR-15s, I'd be out with a street sweeper picking them up.
but the reality
is all around the street.
The absurdity of this is that every gun can kill someone. They can kill.
Yeah.
And if you have a magazine that holds more than one bullet, they can kill multiple people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's what is so despicable, because in the past, when you heard assault weapon, you knew what that meant. You knew what they thought that meant. An AR-15, an AK-47, semi-automatic guns designed to look like fully automatic military weapons. But today, the definition of an assault weapon is very different. If you look at the bill, today's version of the bill, the Assault Weapons Ban of 2019, which was introduced by Dianne Feinstein, it is the most radical departure I've ever seen. Here's an example. So the original assault weapon ban, it banned 24 guns by name. And then it went after copycats, what it called copycats. And a copycat was an assault weapon if it had two or more of these prohibited features, things like a threaded barrel, a grenade launcher, adjustable stock, or a pistol grip. And it defined a pistol grip as a grip jutting conspicuously beneath the action of a firearm. So it's a grip that's straight down beneath the action of a firearm. We know what a pistol grip looks like. We know a rifle that has a pistol grip is not the same as an old-time hunting rifle. The new law, the new bill that they're pushing through, which is Senate Bill 66, it completely redefines the term grip. A pistol grip is defined as – so here it says the term pistol grip means, quote, a grip, a thumb hole stock, or Thurston style grip or stock, or any other characteristic that can function as a grip. So instead of trying to make the argument that having a pistol grip makes a gun more dangerous, if this bill passed right now, any semi-automatic weapon, any semi-automatic rifle or shotgun that accepts a detachable magazine and has a characteristic that you can use it to hold in your hand, if you can hold in your hand, it would be banned. It would be banned. Well, they've defined the prohibited attachment as any grip or any characteristic that can function as a grip. If you can hold it in your hand, it would be banned.
Yeah, well, if you actually go into the bill, it even under the definitions defines semi-automatic pistol, semi-automatic shotgun, semi-automatic assault weapon. But if you go further into the bill, it marries some of the terminology so that it becomes ambiguous. So anything at that point, as you said, could be considered an assault weapon. Anything.
Absolutely. And what they've moved the goalpost. This is them moving the goalpost. For 25 years, they've talked about assault weapons, and now they want to reintroduce this bill. But it's gone so much farther. The gun that I carry with me on a day-to-day basis would be banned because it has a threaded barrel. And if a pistol has a threaded barrel, it's an assault weapon. If a pistol is over 50 ounces, it's an assault weapon. If a pistol has a place where you can insert the magazine outside of the actual handle, like an AR pistol or an AK pistol, it would be an assault weapon. This is a radical departure. And like, Joe, you know, when I go hunting, I bring my Sega 12 shotgun.
That
was reported as a hunting shotgun. Yeah. But if this bill passes, that would be an assault weapon.
Well, I think it should be considered an assault weapon because it's too loud.
Yeah, well, that, I just got to get a silencer for that, I guess. Yeah. No, they can't. And that's the other thing. They want to penalize people and say you can't buy a semi-automatic gun with a threaded barrel. But this bill doesn't stop you from buying a suppressor. So you'd still be allowed to exercise your right and buy a suppressor. You just wouldn't be allowed to buy a gun that you could screw it onto. But listen, I don't want to give them any additional ideas about this. It's just when you hear them say weapons of war, these aren't weapons of war. There's no country on earth that fields an army with a standard issue semi-automatic weapon. There just isn't. Every single country on earth has either a fully automatic weapon or a select fire where it can either fire fully automatic, burst mode, or semi-automatic. There's no country on earth that uses an AR-15 as their standard issue. So, I mean, maybe that's the other take here. If this truly is a weapon of war, show me a war where this weapon has been used.
Well, I think we're getting into semantics and we're going to end up in the same downward spiral that they're in. Let's talk about the fact that it's unrealistic for you to solve a problem by taking away a specific gun. You're not even talking about the problem. You're talking about a symptom of the problem. And now we have people, which, you know, I talk about the El Paso shooting. The El Paso shooting, I'm not convinced that the person that actually committed that crime and killed those people wasn't a part of the same, you know, left-wing conspiracy nut jobs that are out there now trying to, you know, become a martyr for their cause of gun control, right? So let's circle back. Let's go forward in time to what's happened in London, right? Or the UK. So in the UK, you can own, you have to register and you can own a hunting shotgun, you can own a hunting rifle, you can get special permits to have a hunting rifle or a hunting shotgun. But for the most part, the people of the UK, of England, have been disarmed, in large part, completely disarmed. Now, this was done in part to protect, quote unquote, protect the people. So now we are here 20 years later. We're having a conversation about what's happening in England, in the UK. And they are now banning the sale of knives. Not knives as in machetes or, you know, large
knives, not that. We're talking silverware.
Steak knives.
We're talking butter knives.
Steak. You cannot buy a steak knife in England under the age of 18. And they want to raise it from 18 to 21.
And God forbid, you happen to be a chef and you're caught in the street bringing your knives to work. You actually have to answer to that. You have to prove that if you had a steak knife, right, or a chef's knife, or even a fillet knife, if you had a boning knife, if you had any of these knives, even if they can't actually stab people, a meat cleaver, you had any of these things on you, you actually have to prove that you have a legitimate reason to have a knife.
Well,
it's crazy.
And you're absolutely right, Max. And if we look even further into this, we can start to see that this illogical logic of policing ourselves, the 99% or 99.5%, in order to prevent the 0.5% from becoming violent, evil, and doing sick things, you cannot run away from the idea that there's always going to be something else that they can do in order to kill people. They're doing it with cars.
Yeah,
three or four times in the last year that somebody has run through a crowd and plowed through and killed multiple people.
Yeah. Yeah. And now in Europe, it's harder to rent a U-Haul truck. It's harder to rent a van because of it. They're even cracking down on that. We all know that every time a gun control bill passes, there's a countdown clock that starts until the left claims that that's not good enough. We need more, right? We know that they're never going to be happy until they get their ultimate dream, which is either disarmament, gun bans, or some combination of the two.
But how in the world can you get the people that are on the left to realize when they're so fixated on the idea that the utopian dream that if the gun's not there, no one's going to die? Well, the reality of it is that people are going to die because those sick people, those people that are out there that are demented, are evil, are looking to find ways to harm other people, are going to find a way to harm other people. And in this day and age, you can actually 3D build a gun.
Yeah.
So we really can't even stop a crazy person from getting access to a gun or 3D printing a bump stock. Even though bump stocks are illegal, you can still 3D print a bump stock.
Do you print it? I think, just to get back to what you asked, how do we fight back against this? I think that the biggest problem comes with the talking points. The gun control movement is so polished, right? They focus group test their talking points, and when something doesn't work, they go back to the drawing table and they figure it out. There was an organization back in the day. It was called the Coalition to Ban Handguns. And sometime in, I think it was the 80s or 90s, they realized that the public wasn't going to go for that. They weren't going to ban handguns. So they rebranded as the Coalition to Stop Gun Violence. The minute that you catch these gun control groups in like going too far off the edge, they just repackage the talking point. They rebrand. They're so good at it. And what we see now is we go from one mass shooting to the next. We have people that are trotted out in front of the cameras. They're the experts. They push their talking points on the people, and then that fades from the headlines. And then the next time there's a shooting in the news, they try and push a little bit further, a little bit further. And if you go and look at the Gallup polling that they do every time there's a mass shooting, that's the only time they do this polling, you see that it's just ticking up, ticking up, ticking up, slowly, slowly, slowly. They can't push something through. They can't push their ultimate dream through now. But if they can get this little piece through now, maybe the next time they can get the rest, right? If they can just condition us, they know that eventually the resistance will just – the floor will fall out.
Well, I think that this comes back to the fact that they've weaponized technology. I mean, you have the Googles and the Facebooks and all of these liberal rags. I mean, look what happened with the New York Times. They literally changed the headline of their – I don't know if you saw this, but they changed the headline on the New York Times – in order to say, it went from positive, he talked about that hate has no place in our country.
He did exactly what President Trump did, exactly what they wanted him to do.
But it doesn't make any sense.
Oh, no, it makes sense. It makes sense because they're fighting the media war. They're fighting the war over the talking points, over the headlines. They know that the majority of people in America today don't get their news from long-form broadcasts. They get their news from headlines on apps. On the news app, on Apple or on Android, just the headlines. That's all they get. So putting out that headline actually would have been powerful, letting people know, because they're just scrolling through their feed. Oh, wow, that's good. That's good. They couldn't even give Trump that. They couldn't even give Trump the headline. That's why they were so pissed about that, because it didn't matter that the bulk of the article was still anti-Trump. The headline, they couldn't give him the headline.
Yeah, well, I don't know if you actually saw this as well, but Dr. Robert Epstein, did you see how he?
No.
So, Doctor, it was a judicial subcommittee a couple days ago, and you had Cruz was interviewing Dr. Epstein, who was I want to make sure I got this right. So he was a fellow psychology professor. He had his credentials were pretty. He was pretty well known, right? And well vetted. And he is a liberal. He admitted that he voted for Hillary Clinton. He is a very far left leaning individual in his ideologies. Yet he got up and spoke at the subcommittee, and he talked about the fact that Google and Facebook have, in their weaponization of their platforms, actually caused 2.5 million people to vote for Hillary Clinton that would have not voted for Hillary Clinton in the 2016 election, and that these two platforms are actually implementing strategies that don't cost them anything. They leave an invisible footprint, and it allows for them to change the perception and or beliefs of large groups of people across the country.
Yeah, and I mean, that's why Alex Jones called his channel InfoWars, because it is the fight over the information. And if these companies are the gatekeepers and they can control what information gets to you, that's even more powerful than a journalist. The search engines and the tech companies being able to control what you see, that is more powerful than the actual journalism itself. And I think we should definitely do an hour. We probably do 2 hours on that, because it's you're absolutely right. It's happening right now all around us. So we're going to take a quick break. But before we go, if this issue is important to you and you care about stopping this assault weapon ban from passing, because another Republican congressman, Mike Turner from Ohio, just caved today and announced that he's supporting the ban. If you want to help stop this, go to www.conservative-daily.com/AWB. AWB stands for assault weapon ban. Go there. And if you want, join the campaign and help us fight back, because the reason that Republicans are caving on this issue is because they're getting hounded by gun control advocates, hounded by their constituents. And the only way to fight back against this is for you to get loud too. So again, that's conservative-daily.com/AWB. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Ronald Reagan famously said that our freedoms are never more than a generation away from extinction. Conservative Daily exists to make sure that never happens. With our community of 700,000 members, we fight every day to hold Congress's feet to the fire and stop them from surrendering our rights and freedoms. The fight to take this country back is not over. Please join our movement right now by going to conservative-daily.com and clicking the subscribe button to sign up for our free call to action newsletters. We have a chance to save this country, but only if we all work together. Again, this is conservative-daily.com, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button at the top.
This edition of the Conservative Daily podcast, we spent the last half an hour talking about the assault weapons ban, the proposed assault weapons ban. Now we want to switch gears a little bit and focus on what's called the red flag law. It's called an extreme risk protection order. And it's the idea that even if you haven't committed a crime yet, even if you haven't broken the law, you haven't been adjudicated mentally ill, the government should still be allowed to confiscate your guns. Am I having that right, Joe?
Yeah.
So this bill, there's a bill like this in Colorado, which has had huge pushback in it. But essentially, the way it would work is if a family member, a friend, a neighbor, a coworker wanted to turn someone into police, they would be able to do so. And police would be able to use that hearsay, because that's what that is. That's hearsay. It's not evidence. It's hearsay. They'd be able to use that hearsay to convince a judge to give them a confiscation order. They could then show up at your door, confiscate all of your guns, and then it's up to you to fight to get them back. The problem is that when you go to court, you're going to be sitting in front of the very judge that signed the confiscation order to begin with. So he's never seen you, he's never met you, he hasn't seen any evidence in the case at all. But he's already made up his mind that you're too dangerous to own a gun. And now it's up to you, the disarmed gun owner, to convince him otherwise. And if you can't convince him otherwise, then the disarmament order could be extended for 6 months up to a year, depending on the case. Different states have different rules. And now all of this happens without the gun owner even being charged with the crime. They haven't been accused of any wrongdoing whatsoever. Definitionally, these are innocent people. Now, I understand that hindsight's 2020. When we look at these massacres, we look at all the warning signs, like, oh, if only we had known that, then we could have stopped them. Hindsight's always 2020. But we're talking about disarming innocent people who have never been charged and have to fight to prove themselves innocent.
Well, there's two sides to look at this. And the first side is, should there be something in play? Should there be a process by which someone who is mentally unstable should not get access to guns? And I'm going to tell you the answer to that question is yes. There should be some process by which we can measure the competency. Now, I don't know what that is. I don't know what the answer is. But we are faced with an epidemic of mental illness, right? And I don't know, maybe we didn't measure it 50 years ago. Maybe it didn't exist to this extreme 50 years ago. I can only speculate what parts or pieces push people to be more mentally defective. Maybe it's just the fact that we have 7.5-8 billion people in the world, and you know, there's a point of diminishing return. I don't know. I'm not a scientist, but I will tell you, we at some point we have to address that issue. Now, I don't believe that the red flag bill is the way to go, but if we dig just a little bit deeper and do things that allow us to identify those people more clearly. I'm not telling you that I support taking away and limiting people's freedoms, but if we could at least address that, then maybe by slight inconvenience, we can get rid of the loony left doing what they're doing, which is stripping the rest of the law-abiding, non-crazy people of their Second Amendment rights.
So I understand where you're getting at. I do. And I asked the same question. Why weren't we seeing these types of massacres 50 years ago? What changed? The biggest change in the United States, well, there's two. More and more people are being medicated today than they were before. And people who we know are mentally ill today are no longer institutionalized. Now, I'm sure growing up, you knew that there were some weird kids in your grade. I'm sure even some of them probably went to live in a mental institution if they were lucky enough. We don't have mental institutions in this country anymore. It's gone out of style. I mean, I don't want to say that because it's not a style, but it's out of vogue. It's not in vogue anymore to send a kid to a mental institution. The idea is that they stay at home, they stay in the regular school system, and we just medicate them, and that'll be enough. Well, the problem is, under federal law, there's two ways to strip someone of their gun rights for mental illness. They can either be adjudicated mentally defective, which means you go before a court and say this person is a danger to himself and others, or he cannot manage his own affairs. Those are the two ways. And if a judge agrees, then you lose your gun rights. The other way is to be involuntarily admitted to a mental institution. So the court way takes too long. And we know that. It would take too long to disarm all of these people. The fast way to actually make sure that the mentally ill don't have guns, we also can't do because there aren't mental institutions anymore to handle the influx of the people who really should be institutionalized. Not forever, but at least institutionalized until we can figure out what's making them tick like this. So when we talk about we need to do more, and you're like, well, why wasn't this happening 50 years ago? Because we're not doing what we were doing 50 years ago. We're not institutionalizing people and getting them the help they need. We're just giving them meds and letting them stay in the school system.
Right. Well, I mean, we can go back to the Nicholas Cruz shooter from Parkland, from the Parkland, Florida area. And we could talk literally about him specifically. There was, I think, 10, 12, 15 different examples of flags that came up that said, hey, look, this guy's going to end up shooting someone. And we could talk about these two young men, that one killed his own sister. I can't even imagine the whole idea
drove hours in the car and then killed her first. It's weird. But yeah, you're right. With the Parkland situation, there were red flags. And do you know that the school resource officers, the mental health officials in the schools, they had the power to recommend institutionalization. They have that power. If a kid is showing himself to be dangerous, mentally unstable, threatening other people, they have the power to push for institutionalization and for that kid to get mental help. In that case, they didn't. They put him in a separate class, and then ultimately he was kicked out of school. So that's what I kind of mean, that we have these tools that we can use, but the officials aren't using them. The police went to this guy's house dozens of times on different calls. The FBI was notified about him twice. And in all those cases, no one ever brought charges. Right? I don't talk to the police that often, but I probably say 50% of the time that I talk to the police, they're giving me a ticket. Right? We're supposed to believe that the police were called to this guy's house dozens of times, and not once did he even get charged with a crime?
Well, and again, it comes down to the social indifference. I don't know what else to call it. It's the idea that people kick the can down the street. They don't want to make the decision. They don't want to be the one to end up on the other side. And Max, we should probably talk about, hey, the easy way to do this is to take everyone's guns away, right? The hard way to do this would be to empower people to make decisions to find people mentally defective. So on one side, I don't support and I don't like the way the ambiguity of the red flag laws are written. On the other side, it comes closer to identifying people that are issues, right? Or could be potential issues or harmful to themselves or other people, than taking away law-abiding citizens' ability to own a weapon.
I can agree with that. It's just I get back to that. It's hindsight's always 20/20. When you look at these things, you go, well, that was a red flag. That was a red flag. We were just talking about the Parkland shooting. Those weren't red flags that people missed. The police were called to his house dozens of times. The FBI was given a screenshot of him posting online saying, I want to be a school shooter. Like, these aren't red flags that somehow were missed. These were active calls to police, to the FBI, to school officials saying, this guy's dangerous. You got to take care of him.
And yet they did nothing.
And they dropped the ball across the board.
And I think that you'll find that these other two shooters, they did nothing there too, right? This is going to become, by itself, will become a something we should actually explore, we should actually look into. And that is, how many different flags have to go up before we actually do something about the crazy people in this country, right? And why did someone not recognize that this young kid had a mental defect or is mentally unstable before he went and shot his sister and other people? I mean, how? And by the way, he was pro gun control. How does someone that's pro gun control walk in and kill 15, 20 people and it not be a conspiracy towards the left just trying to erode public sentiment towards taking away everyone's ability to for the Second Amendment? And actually, the more I sit here and talk to you about it, the more convinced I am that the left is unafraid to kill people to get what they want. That they are absolutely 100% crazy. They're nuts. People on the left are just nuts.
Well, let's say that is true. Let's talk about what they want to use this for. I mean, we know that they like to use tragedies like this to push their agenda. It was Rahm Emanuel, who was Barack Obama's chief of staff, who said, never let a good crisis go to waste. They're now pushing this red flag bill. So let's listen to Lindsey Graham real quick. I think it's about a minute. Let's hear him describe it, because he is the guy who's writing the bill. Let's go to cut 7.
Starting with the idea of red flag laws, I think these protective orders have a lot of hope to solve some of these cases.
Well, I want to put up a map now so folks can see where there are a number of states that have done this across the country. Of course, there are always concerns about due process. A lot of people have,
right,
that guns could be taken, Second Amendment rights could be potentially violated before people have a chance to make their side of the case. How do you thread that needle?
Well, number one, Indiana was one of the first states to do this. Here's what we do. This is not going to be a federal law. It'll be a federal grant program. To get the federal grant, you have to have due process. There has to be an imminent threat of harm to oneself or to others before the police, and it can only be the police, can go to a judge. You have a hearing. You got to have more likely than not standard that there's an imminent threat of bodily injury. 7 days later, you have a full-blown hearing, clear and convincing evidence where the gun owner can come in and defend themselves, and the government has to prove by clear and convincing evidence that the person is disturbed, a danger to themselves or others. And if that test is met, they can seize the guns and get the person the help they need.
Okay, so this is going to get a little bit wonky, and it's going to get a little bit into the weeds, but what he's saying there is very important. In the United States, you're innocent until you're proven guilty, and it's the government's responsibility to go into court and to prove you're guilty. The standard that they have to meet in order for you to get convicted of a felony or a violent misdemeanor, which is what needs to happen for you to lose your gun rights, the standard they need to meet is proof beyond a reasonable doubt. And they have to convince a judge or a jury more often that you are guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. If they fail to make that argument, then they lose and that you're not guilty and you get to go on your way. What Lindsey Graham is talking about here is lowering the standard. So the proof beyond a reasonable doubt is the highest legal standard in the United States. Yes, you're guilty. As you get farther down that list, the argument isn't as convincing. So he's talking about in order to get an initial confiscation order, you need to be able to prove by the preponderance of evidence. Now, what that means is basically 50-50 chance, slightly more than 50-50. So slightly better than coin flip odds that someone's a danger to themselves or others. That's a big difference from proving that someone is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. And then he says after 7 days, the government needs to meet the clear and convincing evidence standard, which simply means that something is highly probable and more likely than not. So this is opening the door for the government to be able to confiscate someone's guns by a lower standard. Now, I understand that we want to make it easier for the government to take guns out of the hands of the mentally ill, but we just talked about the fact that out of all of the times that these people have been reported, they were never prosecuted, right? Going down this road, I think is throwing the baby out with the bathwater, because the last thing we want is for the government to be able to disarm people by a lower standard. They don't have to prove you're guilty. They just have to prove that, hey, 50-50 chance, a little bit more likely you're going to hurt someone. I mean, every person who owns a gun for self-defense meets that standard, that they're going to hurt someone else if they walk through their door. And that was a problem that was in Colorado's law. I understand the need to do something, but when I look at this and I look at the different standards of proof, this is just, it's too easy for someone to lose their rights. They don't become rights at that point, they're privileges.
All right, so let me ask you a question.
Okay.
What's the answer? Because in my, what I think the answer is I think that at some point we have to address the mental health issue. And I don't think that we have experts that have that capability of addressing that issue. I don't think we have people with enough courage that actually know how to implement to solve that issue.
Well, what the left ultimately wants is they want everyone who wants to buy a gun to have to undergo a mental health check before they can do it. That's their ultimate goal. I don't think that'll happen. That's like a poll tax on African Americans in the Jim Crow South. It's not going to happen. That's their goal. The way I think we can get there is you don't need to throw the baby out with the bathwater. You don't need to give the government the power to confiscate someone's guns without even charging them with a crime, because throughout this whole process, they don't even have to accuse you of breaking the law. You can lose your gun for a year and you're not even charged. You're still innocent. Instead of doing that, I think what we do is we add things to the list of prohibited persons. Instead of saying that the government can disarm you without proving that you're actually guilty, we increase the number of crimes that can be used as a disqualifier. So here's an example. The one shooting, I think it was the El Paso, was it El Paso or Dayton, where he had a rape list. He had a school shooting list. He compiled a list of people he wanted to kill in school. And then he showed that list to one of the girls on the list. So, yeah, this is my rape list. You're on it. Now, if I was a prosecutor, I look at that and I say, okay, that he's menacing her. You probably get him for stalking, harassment, different charges regarding plotting, a felony conspiracy to commit a crime. There's a whole list of possible crimes that he could have been charged with, right? Harassment, stalking, all that. A lot of those crimes would be very easy to convict, but they wouldn't technically rise to the level necessary for someone to lose their gun rights. Now, I'm not saying that someone who's convicted of harassment or stalking should lose their rights forever. I think that's really bad considering how often those charges are thrown around by vengeful exes and the like. But I think that if you were to create a different system within the law that says if you're charged and convicted of one of these lower crimes, you don't lose your rights forever, but you then get put into this other system where there's just extra vetting on you to make sure that, yeah, you were convicted of stalking a couple decades ago, making sure that you're not going to use that gun to kill the person you were stalking.
Yeah. Well, I mean, with that said, I don't think we're going to solve the issue today, but I am going to say kind of in closing that at some point we have to stop staying silent. And I think we've had this conversation before. I think a vast majority of conservative Americans that are just level-headed, you know, they're not racist, they're just hard-working Americans, and they're black, white, Asian, Hispanic. It doesn't matter what race we're talking about, what political affiliation we're talking about. We just, those people are people that are just, we're staying silent. We're standing on the sidelines watching all this craziness happen, and we're looking at each other like, yeah, let's not say anything. This is the media is going to turn it into a circus. Let's just stay away from it. I have friends that literally tell me all the time, they go, Joe, just, I don't want to talk politics. I want to stay as completely away from it as possible. I go, well, don't you see there's a problem? They go, yeah, we see it as a problem. But, you know, I'm going to live my life. And I keep telling people you can't just live your life. Unfortunately, you can't have the loony left walk around as if they're, you know, on a mission to, you know, change our entire societal makeup and just be okay with it. Because what's going to end up happening is you're going to wake up one day and you're not going to have anything. Everything that you know that you have now or that you've worked hard to get to that place, it's all going to be gone. It's going to evaporate with some of these major changes that the left are pushing.
Yeah, so you talk about what people can do. We're running a campaign right now to stop this red flag law from going into effect. And if you're getting fired up listening to this and you want to make sure that the government doesn't get new powers to disarm innocent individuals, go to www.conservative-daily.com/red flag, all one word. Read the piece and join the campaign, and let's stop this bill from going into effect, because I think there are ways that we can address the issues that are facing the country when it comes to mass shootings. But I don't think that lawful gun owners should have to look over their shoulder and get worried about all of a sudden losing their rights because their angry neighbor or their ex-wife wants to get back at them for something. So if you want to join that campaign, it's conservative-daily.com/red flag. Now, that's going to be it for today's edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. Now, this is your no-compromise conservative dose of sanity. I want to thank Josh for producing the podcast. Joe Otto, thanks for joining us.
Absolutely.
And to everyone else who has listened in, we want to grow this show. So please make sure that you like the podcast, subscribe for future updates, and obviously share it with your like-minded friends. The fight to preserve and defend the Republic is not over. Just because Trump won doesn't mean the fight to take the country back is over. We can do it, but we can only do it together. So until the next time, this is Max and Joe signing off.
This has been the Conservative-Daily Podcast with Joe Otto and Max McGuire. To continue the fight, please join the movement and go to conservative-daily.com and click the subscribe button now.